Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're still on the road, and hence the mobile studio is in operation. I'm very pleased always to be able to nonetheless bring you this program, especially with such wonderful guests as our first one in today's program. He is George Raceley. I call him our resident genius here at Securing America, a Mensa Society member, certified. And he is a man with tremendous experience in political life, having been involved in some 300 campaigns, including at the presidential level, having served on Capitol Hill and senior staff positions there, as well as in the office of the Vice President of the United States. George is these days the editor-in-chief of a terrific newsletter from Richard Viguerie's organization entitled Conservative HQ. George, welcome back to Securing America. It's great to have you, sir.
Thank you, as always, Frank.
I want to start by asking you about developments on the Hill. Yesterday, there was a very important reboot, I guess you might call it, having failed the first time around. One of the impressive young freshman members of the House of Representatives, Ana Paulina Luna, has persevered in bringing a second set of ethics charges, effectively, against Adam Schiff, the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. This time around, it worked. The first time, 20 Republicans voted not to censure this really reprehensible man, the prime example of the sort of lack of integrity that we often find in politicians, give the business of politics a bad name, in fact. This time around, those 20, I think, all voted in favor. There may have been several that were on the Ethics Committee and voted present simply out of a recognition that they were going to now have to investigate this man. But give us your read, George, on the importance of this action and whether it was warranted.
Well, I have to give a great deal of credit to Ana Paulina Luna, a member of the Florida delegation, my present home state. She did a fabulous job and is, going great places. And this was something that was long, long overdue. It's hard to describe Adam Schiff in words of more than four letters. This guy is...
And ones we can't use on this program.
Right. All the words that are prohibited on TV. Anyway, this guy is easily the most vile human being to ever occupy a seat in the United States Congress, and that's saying a lot. He has made lying a mark of excellence somehow. The more you lie, the higher in the Democratic Party you rise. And I've written a couple columns about how the epidemic of lying in government has affected particularly Congress. But I mean, one of the prime examples is that every time there's a so-called spending deal, there will always be statements from, the House and Senate leadership about how this cuts spending, this does this, this does that. And at the end of the fiscal year, anybody that bothers to look will see that spending increased. And I recall very vividly a column that I wrote when Paul Ryan was Speaker. And he and all the, Obama and all the various and sundry Democrat leaders put out this big statement about how this was the biggest cut in government spending ever. And at the end of the fiscal year, the government spent $254 billion more than the previous year, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. So this is just, and Schiff's lies about Trump went well beyond that because they were not intended to advance a policy. They were intended to destroy the duly elected president of the United States. And they were well known to many people to be lies, and few stood up to protest them. Devin Nunes, his counterpart on the Republican side in the Intel Committee, was one of the few. The present Republican leader of the Intel Committee, Mike Turner, has been completely MIA on this issue.
And, well, voted not to censure him the last time. I guess he must have voted for it this time, but I'm sure very reluctantly. But George, let me ask you a question, because you worked on Capitol Hill, as I mentioned, in the House, as I recall, as well as the Senate. Part of the problem here, I think properly understood, is that Nancy Pelosi, for the first time, when she was the Speaker of the House, appointed not only Adam Schiff, but an array of very dubious characters to serve on the Intelligence Committee, really changing it from the basically nonpartisan committee that was objectively exploring serious matters of intelligence oversight and enhancement in a dangerous world, and essentially turned it into the playpen of political hacks and liars and worse. I mean, Eric Swalwell, it's not just Schiff, it's Eric Swalwell, who slept with a Chinese spy. It's Andre Carson, who has been associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, it was just a rogues gallery. And not surprisingly, they abused the powers of that committee. I think we don't even know the full extent of it. God only knows what it did to the intelligence community. But George, your thoughts on that as a underlying problem here that takes the, you know, sort of, I guess, occupational hazard when you're talking about politicians and willingness to lie and abuse power and so on, to a whole new level, does it not?
Well, you're absolutely right, Frank. And let's not forget that Nancy Pelosi came up through the Intel Committee. And when I worked for, you know, now retired Congressman Mac Thornberry of Texas, there was a big question about whether Pelosi had been briefed up on various aspects that had come before the Intelligence Committee. And she claimed not to have been briefed, when in fact the record, such as could be disclosed in a non-classified arena, was clear that she had been, and she was just lying. And so, excuse me, I would suggest that, as you have, that all of this starts with Nancy Pelosi. And she created a team, if you will, on the Intelligence Committee of her acolytes who were and are congenital liars, who are part of the weaponization of the intelligence community against their political opponents. And this is something that had never been seen before.
No, I think you're right. And I think you've really put your finger on a very important aspect of how that weaponization has come to pass, where these agencies, these very powerful intelligence instruments, have been used against not just Republican opponents like Donald Trump, but the American people as well. Mm-hmm. George, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk with you about another scandal that involves the Durham report. We'll be right back with that right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Finally, Representative Adam Schiff has been held accountable for his serial lies to the American people, the costly investigations and impeachments they encouraged, and the abuse of the power entrusted to him as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee that enabled both. As the late William Safire famously said of Hillary Clinton, Schiff is a congenital liar. His earlier removal from the Intel Committee and now his censure by the full House of Representatives fall far short of the expulsion such an utter lack of integrity actually warrants. But it is the least Congress can do and encourages hope for more correctives with respect to others in government like Messrs. Biden, Garland, and Mayorkas, who have similarly betrayed the public trust by abusing their offices and the oath to support and defend the Constitution they took upon entering them. This is Frank Affney. We're back. We are speaking with George Raceley, one of our regulars here, I'm proud to say, at Securing America, a man who brings, well, extraordinary intelligence to bear. We've been talking about the Intelligence Committee, not to be confused with the kind George has. This is, you know, the very important asset that we prize so much is his expertise as well as his experience in matters of high politics and policy. And it's always good to have him with us. George, I wanted to turn from Adam Schiff and insights about his misconduct to the misconduct that has now been documented by John Durham, the special prosecutor, who unfortunately didn't turn out to be much of a prosecutor in this matter. A couple of small fish, two of which got off the hook and one that got a slap on the wrist. But big fish were identified in his report as perpetrators of one of the greatest political scandals, yes, but crimes of all time, certainly in this country's history. Talk us through both what we have learned and what seemingly fell short in this prosecution.
The Durham's report and his testimony didn't really tell us anything that we didn't already know. There were no great revelations, to be perfectly honest with you, that hadn't come out in dribs and drab for a couple of years. And my takeaway from Durham's testimony yesterday was that he was not going to bring cases on these matters because he didn't think he could get convictions before a DC jury.
You've got some legal training. Did he have to bring those cases in DC?
Well, it would appear that he probably would have needed to bring those cases in DC, or probably would have been told by his bosses to bring them in DC.
Well, there's that. But he's supposed to be independent of those bosses, was he not?
Well, don't believe that for a second, Frank. So anyway, the utility, if you will, of his testimony yesterday was to keep the fire burning on the illegitimacy of the whole Trump-Russiagate scandal. And to that extent, that was useful. And so we've got, several more news cycles in which the American people can be told again that this was all phony. And that's important because even if one were to poll today, you would see a large percentage of Americans believing that Trump, in fact, quote, colluded, end of quote, with the Russians.
Yeah. So reminds me of that old line. I can't remember who it was who said it, that, a lie gets circulated around the world before the truth gets its pants on. I think it might be Mark Twain. But the truth of the matter is that what's been documented here is the collusion, apparently going back to Barack Obama and certainly Hillary Clinton and James Comey and, you know, the various culprits at the CIA, John Brennan, Clapper, and so on, were all up to their eyeballs this effort to conjure up, as did Adam Schiff, out of whole cloth, a Russian connection to Donald Trump that compromised him and so on. And as you say, an awful lot of Americans remain persuaded that there's something there.
Well, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt based on Durham's report and other information that's come out that this was put in motion by Obama, or certainly with his acquiescence and
his knowledge, for sure.
His absolute knowledge. And so, again, the utility is to have this thing in the record to get it into the news cycles again. You know, potentially there's a political ad or two in there somewhere, which would be, you know, good for a pro-Trump or a pro-truth political action committee to put together.
But George, is there not any prospect that the Congress of the United States will be further exploring and hopefully bringing criminal charges? They can't obviously prosecute the matter, but the idea that you at least go through this exercise, personally, I would have liked to have seen John Durham bring those cases, even if he couldn't win them.
Well, absolutely.
If he had to in a court.
That seems to me to be fundamental to the job of a prosecutor. If, you know, you prosecute where the evidence leads. the thing about Congress is, I don't see them as going through Durham's report, his testimony, or any other information, and making referrals to the Justice Department, somewhat for the same reason. I mean, it's shameful. But I think they've concluded that it's just not worth the time and effort to expend. They got other things to do, which I think is a disservice to the American people. And it's certainly a disservice to those who were persecuted through this effort.
It encourages people to believe they can engage in such misconduct with impunity. And that's the last thing we want in this country. George, finally, let me just turn quickly to Hunter Biden. Speaking of miscarriages of justice, what are we to make of the plea to which he copped and the various other crimes that, well, at least his lawyer seems to think now are in the rearview mirror?
Well, I mean, there's been some good research done that suggests that there's solid evidence of the Biden family, with Hunter at the center, committing over 500 prosecutable crimes. And the deal that he got in this plea bargain is outrageous, because I could go through a number of well-known African-American celebrities who have been prosecuted, thrown in jail, bankrupted, for exactly the same crimes. The rapper Dakota Black, Wesley Snipes. So, you know, this princeling of the Democratic Party gets off with a slap on the wrist when the base voters of the Democratic Party, celebrities and leaders, are thrown in jail, their lives destroyed over exactly the same alleged crimes.
Yeah. But to this question, George, again, drawing on some legal training, is it possible that this is the end of the investigation into those other 497 crimes?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Hunter Biden's attorney sort of, as you pointed out, said, all good, you know, we're done. U.S. attorney for Delaware said otherwise, that the investigation is, quote, ongoing, end of quote. Now, what does that mean? Well, You know, another 5 years will go on before a plea deal to the legal equivalent of a traffic ticket. Who knows? And of course, the statute of limitations is running on many of these things.
Yeah. George, it's extremely troubling, I have to say, that as we've discussed on previous occasions, the rule of law predicated on the very, very, I think, foundational principle in our country of equal justice under the law is in tatters as a result of this sort of thing. And again, I fear that if people do, in fact, get away with, well, it's maybe murder in some sense, at the very least, it is completely unconscionable and a betrayal of the duty to the American people. We have to leave it at that, my friend. Come back to us with more for the very near future. I appreciate all your time, as always. God bless you, my friend. We'll be right back with more after this.
To destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. And Dr. Bradley Thayer, one of my colleagues and friends at the Center for Security Policy, is with us now. He directs the center's China programs and is just an amazingly prolific and extremely impressive expert, analyst, and commentator on what is going on inside the Chinese Communist Party and what it means for all of us. He is the author most recently of, co-author of a really important book, Understanding the China Threat, and the author of literally practically daily op-ed articles, columns, and essays in various publications, including, I'm very pleased to say now, as a regular featured contributor to AmericanGreatness.com, where he will be co-authoring pieces on a weekly basis with one of our other great China hands and friends, Captain James Fennell, United States Navy, retired. Both men are members of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, for which I'm also very grateful. Brad Thayer, welcome back. It's good to have you, sir.
Thank you, Frank. It's my pleasure to join you today.
Well, it's a target-rich environment, as they say, Brad. Let's start with your takeaway from the visit of Secretary of State Antony Blinken to Beijing and, well, more importantly, perhaps the Chinese Communist Party's takeaway from that visit.
Well, Blinken's visit was, in some respects, the Chinese Communist Party's Christmas present to the Biden administration. They had wanted this visit for so long and so desperately in what is unseemly and the reverse of what you should do in diplomacy, to beg your adversary to host the meeting. But nonetheless, he went, he received his visit, and it was a disaster. In every respect, Xi Jinping humiliated.
Meaning the Biden administration's Christmas present to Beijing.
Indeed, it might have been. Maybe there were other gifts that were exchanged, and perhaps not the Christmas holiday, but some other felicitous event, at least from their perspective. It was a disaster. He was humiliated by Xi Jinping, and he was humiliated by the Chinese foreign minister and the Chinese foreign minister's colleagues. The events in Cuba, which have come to the fore, the spy balloon, and President Biden's bizarre comments about its dismissal, and that Xi Jinping a get out of jail free card, in essence, for flying a spy balloon over American soil, which was also a very important political message that the CCP is targeting Americans. So while Blinken got the visit, the rest of us rue the day that he went. And so now we have to deal with the aftermath. And Cuba, the Chinese spy base / military base falling on the heels of Blinken's return, I think really illuminates that the Biden administration's foreign policy, or the Biden doctrine, as I call it, is the humiliation of the United States. We see this with China. We see it with the policy towards Iran. We see it with the open southern border. The Biden administration is determined to humiliate the U.S. And of course, we're dealing with the consequences of this every day.
Yeah. Well, Brad, as you know, the takeaway to every bad guy on the planet from such humiliation, such abasement of the United States, is an invitation to more aggressive behavior, especially on the part of the Chinese Communist Party, which reinforces my general theory of the case, which is it's not just about humiliation. It is humiliating to see what's being done to our country, but it's just a symptom, a manifestation of what I think of as a wrecking operation that the Biden team has been engaged in literally every policy I can think of, domestic and foreign, which seem to have in common two things. One, they're bad for America, and two, they all seem to benefit the Chinese Communist Party indirectly, if not directly. Your thoughts?
Well, the arrows seem point in that direction, Frank. Time and again, the arrows point in that direction. So we now have not just a datum point, we have data, and a lot of data in this respect. And as Representative Comer and others pull on this thread, we're going to see that the Chinese Communist Party, directly and indirectly, as well as others, the Russians, the Ukrainians, and who knows? I mean, the list might be an extensive one at the end of the day, that the Biden family was profiting handsomely by President Biden, Vice President Biden, Senator Biden's, Vice President Biden's position. And that is, of course, egregious. It's beyond the pale, and it has to be dealt with, of course, by Congress. We recognize, of course, it's limited in terms of the response, but other events, too, deserve to be noted. We have a president who has serious physical problems and mental problems. And so we have rather an incongruous set of remarks with respect to President Xi Jinping. The weekend where he's dismissing Xi Jinping's culpability, when he certainly is culpable for the spy balloon and every other effort to hurt Americans from.
So you mean you don't believe that Xi was unaware of where that balloon was or what
Absolutely.
It was carrying or
Absolutely
what it was
not.
Doing?
No, that's not the way communist regimes operate. And if he had been, and it had been a symbol, if it had been a problem for China, their heads would have rolled. We would have seen this, but Xi was very happy with the message that was sent, that the Biden administration is subordinate. A spy balloon can loiter over American soil, over in American airspace, and humiliate the United States while conveying to Americans that China can touch, China can reach out and kill Americans if necessary. That's contrasted with President Biden's remarks yesterday, where he calls Xi Jinping a dictator, which he certainly is. So we are.
So what do you make of that? Was that just a slip, do you think? Was that a conscious decision to try to position himself rather better? What do you make of it?
I think there, indeed, that may be the case, Frank, but also we are dealing with a president with physical and mental problems. And so we are dealing, we don't know what's going to come out of President Biden's mouth because he's a man who's ill.
Occasionally, it apparently is the truth. Maybe when he's on his game, it's lying, but it's occasionally at least on the truth.
The old joke about the stop clock, of course, being right twice a day. Exactly. I think is certainly. But again, we have a major problem. That is the leader of the free world states bizarre, incongruous, odd, and remarks, while the rest of the world, of course, the president speaks to global audiences, not just the American people, but to allies, friends, and enemies around the world. So having a president where you don't know, first you're left scratching your skull, you've got to scratch your head about what's going on with President Biden, and then recognizing, well, is this some type of messaging, or is it simply a result of his frailties? As a result of his physical and mental decline. And this is not where we should be.
Especially, Brad, if we're trying to deter the Chinese Communist Party from doing to Taiwan, or for that matter, our other friends or allies of us, our interests, or us.
We're speaking.
Which raises this question. You've written a piece about the end of Pax Americana. And I had a sort of similar take on it, suggesting that not only is that ending, but we're now entering, if we're not pretty squarely in, thanks to, well, Barack Obama, as well as Joe Biden, I call this the Obama-Biden third term, in a post-America moment as well. Is that where we find ourselves, Brad? And what are the implications for deterring the Chinese Communist Party from taking advantage of it?
It's an extremely risky time for allies and partners like Taiwan in international politics. And so we do see the point that Jim Fennell and I were making in the article was that all of what previous generations had constructed, victory in World War II, victory in the Cold War, is being squandered, has been lost by individuals who could not hold a candle to the great leaders, military leaders, civilian leaders that we had in that time. So yes, what we're witnessing is, as a result of the bizarre messaging from the Biden administration, we're witnessing doubt among our allies, we're witnessing doubt among the invitation to aggression from our adversaries like Xi Jinping and the control of the Chinese Communist Party to aggress against Taiwan, to aggress against the Ryukyus. Xi Jinping's alarming remarks about Okinawa, largest island in the Ryukyu chain, which is Japanese.
Tell us what that remark was.
His remark was that the Ryukyus essentially are in play, that they have been Chinese in the past. They've been Han in the past. So here he's making another irredentist claim to territory which is, in fact, not Chinese. It is not Han, just as Taiwan was not historically. So we're seeing an individual who is in Xi Jinping, we're seeing an individual who's risk-accepting and very bold. He's prone to aggression. And we need a U.S. president who can convey the right deterrent messages so that we don't get into a shooting war. We're already in a political war, of course, that can't be avoided, but to avoid a kinetic war, which is only emboldened by the bizarre and contradictory Biden remarks.
Thank you, Brad Thayer. We have to leave it at that for the moment. Come back to us with updates on all of this, if you would,
soon.
We'll be right back with more right after this. Stay tuned. This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Finally, Representative Adam Schiff has been held accountable for his serial lies to the American people, the costly investigations and impeachments they encouraged, and the abuse of the power entrusted to him as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee that enabled both. As the late William Safire famously said of Hillary Clinton, Schiff is a congenital liar. His earlier removal from the Intel Committee and now his censure by the full House of Representatives fall far short of the expulsion such an utter lack of integrity actually warrants. But it is the least Congress can do, and encourages hope for more correctives with respect to others in government, like Messrs. Biden, Garland, and Mayorkas, who have similarly betrayed the public trust by abusing their offices and the oath to support and defend the Constitution they took upon entering them. This is Frank Affney. We're back. Joining us now is Trevor Loudon, one of our country's preeminent authorities on a phenomenon that he has properly described as the enemies within. That's a title of a superb book and a documentary film of the name. He is also the author and driving force behind The Enemies Within the Church, another very important documentary, and several new books describing the enemy within the United States House of Representatives, a six-volume set entitled House Un-Americans, and a counterpart discussing the security risk senators over on the other side of Capitol Hill. He's a great friend, a very valued comrade in arms as a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China. And always a welcome guest here. Trevor Loudon, it's good to have you back, sir. Welcome.
Well, thanks very much, Frank. It was a pleasure.
I want to start by asking you about Adam Schiff. We spoke earlier in the program with George Raceley about his conduct. I'd like to get into a little bit more with you, his background. We'll broaden the lens as we go through that background. But just tell us a bit about him and whether he would qualify as an enemy within.
I think without doubt he would qualify as an enemy. He was put into place into Congress by a coalition of Marxist groups back in the early, about 2000, I think it was. But all the time he was attacking Trump over his so-called Russia, ties, he was involved with the Committee of 100. Now, that is probably the preeminent Chinese influence operation in the country. And Schiff has been working with them for 15 or 16 years. Through their auspices, he has met senior Chinese Communist Party officials on several occasions. He has met with them in Washington, D.C. He has attended their conferences, keynoted their conferences. So this is the major Chinese influence operation in the country, and Schiff is deeply in bed with it. But he had the gall to criticize and lie about a sitting president over bogus ties to Russia. Why is nobody taking him up on his ties to China?
Well, and it's a very important nexus there, isn't it? That the more we're talking about Russia, the less we're talking about China. The more we're preoccupied with Russia and Ukraine, the less we're focused on what Russia will be supporting the Chinese, to be sure, but what China is going to be doing vis-a-vis Taiwan or us or anybody else.
Well, the CCP, their greatest enemy for the last, for 4 years was Trump. And here you have Adam Schiff leading the charge to bring down Trump, at the same time maintaining very close relationships with the leading Chinese influence operation in America. And nobody called him out on this.
Yeah,
I don't see.
To say nothing of the fact that the guy's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee
all the time.
Astonishing.
Well, Swalwell was eventually kicked off the House Intelligence Committee for being in bed with a Chinese agent. Well, you know, this is.
But only after years had passed, in the course of which he was still a chairman of one of its most important subcommittees on research and development, for heaven's sakes.
Exactly. Well, Schiff was also in bed with China, not quite as literally as Swalwell, but
as far as we can tell.
As far as we can tell. But absolutely, you know, Schiff's involvement with the Council for the Committee of 100, goes back 15 years. He's met senior officials, you know, right from his beginning days as a congressman. He's been working with these people right up to the present day. But that's not an issue, apparently.
Yeah, so senior officials in the Chinese Communist Party is one thing, I guess. What you're talking about, which is part of the backing up of the lens that I want to get to, is the degree to which the machine from which he hails, namely the California Democratic Party, is deeply penetrated by the Chinese Communists. We talked again earlier with George Raisley about Nancy Pelosi. As one of the products of that machine and one of its driving forces, she was very supportive of Adam Schiff, not only putting him on that committee and having him be the chairman, but supporting him throughout this period of serial lying as well.
Yeah, well, Nancy Pelosi's, she has her own radical background, but she would take anti-China positions 10, 15 years ago, no more. She is very, as her business husband's business ties to China have expanded, her willingness to criticize the CCP has decreased. Just another.
What is that expression? Little bad mouth.
Little bad mouth, big help.
Big help.
You know, that's, you can criticize China in certain ways. That's all right. That's acceptable. But as long as you're really helping, you know, a little bit of bad mouth is acceptable.
And that's true, I guess, at least in the past of Nancy Pelosi, maybe not so much of the little bad mouth at the moment, but certainly big help. And how about this Democratic machinery and more generally? You mentioned Swalwell as another example. Judy Chu is another product of it all, is she not?
Look, the Democratic machine will occasionally badmouth China, but ultimately it serves Chinese interests. And we see that right from the top with Joe Biden, all the way, you know, through Congress, through senators like Mark Kelly and Dianne Feinstein, obviously, but right down into the real meat of the party. This is a party that is deeply in bed with the unions in this country, and the AFL-CIO has long cast its lot with the CCP. So you're talking about a party.
Despite its previous incarnations under Meany and Kirkland. Right?
Well, that's right. You know, in the mid-90s, the Marxists took over the AFL-CIO and they kicked out the patriotic guys, the Meany generation, the Lane Kirklands. And now they are Marxist and they are aligned with the CCP, which is why they followed the CCP line with their mass lockdowns. You know, the unions were a big part of enforcing those lockdowns because the unions are allied to the CCP in this country.
Yeah. Trevor Loudon, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a bit more broadly about the Marxist playbook that we've seen operating not only in your native New Zealand, but very much here in America, and the extent to which it is, in fact, advancing the agenda of taking down the United States at the hands, not least, of enemies within. I'll be right back with the author of that book and more right after this. Welcome back. We're visiting with the great Trevor Loudon, the author of a series of very important books, including The Enemies Within, as well as a documentary filmmaker of considerable accomplishments, and a contributor in many other ways, essays and podcasts and the like. And we're very pleased always to have him with us. And Trevor, we were talking about basically Marxism, the Chinese communist strain of it, or as they'd like to say, socialism with Chinese characteristics. Yes. Operating inside the democratic machine of California and more broadly the Democratic Party. You've written extensively about the elite capture that they've taken, make great strides in capturing our various leaders in political life and otherwise. I wanted to ask you about one of the techniques that you say is now very much in evidence in New Zealand, but also here at home, as to how to accomplish the takedown of the United States and countries like it from within using fault lines that have sort of racism as their rubric.
Yes, well, you know, back in Stalin's day and Mao's day, they were trying to reinvent Marxism because the old working class versus capitalist thing wasn't working in Western countries, particularly in the United States. So they worked on the because people can change their class here up or down pretty quickly, but you can't change your race. So right from the 1920s on, Stalin and then later Mao developed what they call the nationalities question. If you want a revolution in a modern industrial country, you use the racial fault lines more than anything. In New Zealand, we're seeing that with the native Maori population. In Australia, it's with the Aboriginal population. In Canada, it's with the Inuits and the Native Americans. And in the United States, we're seeing this nationalities question politics playing out, particularly amongst the black populations. Black Lives Matter was a Chinese operation, 100%, all the way through. But we're also seeing it with the Native Americans. One of the leading Native American activists in this country, for instance, Judith LeBlanc, serves on the Central Committee of the Communist Party USA, which is loyal to China. And she put her very good friend, Deb Haaland, another Native American, and it put her in, basically made her Secretary of the Interior, controlling all the Native American reservations. So you're seeing all these.
And a lot of public lands across the United States, too.
All the public lands, and they're shutting down energy extraction, and they're creating, you know, this actual revolution right now brewing in places like Western South Dakota. You've actually got rebel, you know, actual militant armies forming, you know, militant groups forming in these states to cause major problems. I talked about New Zealand. We have our Minister of Justice, a woman called Kerry Allen, was part of a Zapatista support group in New Zealand in the early 2000s. Well, they had
Zapatista being
the Mexican Marxist cartel rebels, Cuban backed rebels. Well, they had an American woman who used to come and work with them. Her name is Walia Johns. Well, she is now in charge of Indian Affairs in the Department of Energy in the United States. She is a top person in the Department of Energy, and their job is to shut down all energy extraction on Native American, Inuit land in Alaska, the United States, to basically cripple the U.S. economy. So this
it is also is crippling, by the way, the last time I checked, the Native Americans economy. We were talking with Dave Walsh about this last week in connection with what's happening to the Navajo at the hands of this Native American at the Interior Department in that case.
Well, that's, you know, the idea is to keep them poor and keep them angry. It's the same as the, you know, the Democrat-controlled cities with large black populations. the idea is to keep them on the plantation, keep them as a revolutionary class, a permanently aggrieved class. They don't want these people coming into the middle class.
Right. And they want more of the middle class forced into those cities, by the way, the 15-minute cities and all of that.
Well,
hey, Trevor, before we run out of time, I did want to ask you about one other thing, talking about the playbook of the Marxists. One of their agenda items has, I guess, going really back to Karl's day, Karl Marx, has been global governance or world government, as they called it, under the control, obviously, of the communists. That is advancing very, very aggressively now with the active help and support of the Biden administration.
Yep.
Through various vehicles, prominently the World Health Organization. I woke up today to a report from National Public Radio in which they were promoting the idea that gun violence, properly understood, is actually a public health emergency. And if so, it fits my theory that what they're really working towards in giving a communist Ethiopian picked for the job of Director General of the World Health Organization by the Chinese Communist Party, the authority to tell us what our public health policy will be is, among other things, to dictate to us what is a public health emergency in terms of gun violence and what we must do about it, which I assume contemplates confiscating those weapons.
Well, exactly. And racism is a public health problem too. Opposition to transgenderism could be a public health problem. See, the head of the, so Tedros, as you say, is an Ethiopian Maoist Marxist, the head of the WHO, but the head of the Behavioral Modification Unit, which is in charge of messaging and getting people to conform with the policies, is Susan Mickey of the Communist Party of Britain, who is 100% loyal to this, the Communist Party of China. She was so extreme in the Communist Party, and she's still a member. They used to call her Stalin's nanny. She was she ran Boris Johnson's response to COVID, and she was the one who said we may have to wear masks for the rest of our lives. So given the next, if Biden pushes this through, given the next health emergency, which you could say would be guns, the two people in control of that will be a British communist and an Ethiopian communist, both working for the CCP.
What could possibly go wrong? Trevor, we have to leave it at that. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to the rest of you for doing so. Come back next time.